Is this on?
Yes, my lord.
Good. Hello, this is God speaking. Can we dial that down?
Yes, my lord.
Thanks. Welcome, new arrival, to the Eternity Ward. Please take a number and make your way down to the left or the right to the waiting room. All you need is the refreshments I made just for you. I would tell you to steer clear of the apples, they're forbidden, and the two snakes. I mean, fools, sorry, that are chewing the fat in the corner, but you probably wouldn't listen anyway. So good luck, I bless you, and on your way.
Welcome to the Eternity Ward, where we flick through old copies of Reader's Digest and chat with our buddies while we wait for an appointment with God. I'm Nick McKinnon.
And I'm Chris Adams. And how's my buddy Nick going?
I'm doing very well, Chris. I've had a lovely few days of Tasmanian sunshine.
Tasmanian sunshine?
Yeah, it's the light version of the mainland sunshine.
You're not going to ask me how I'm going?
No, I presume you're fabulous compared to last time I spoke with you. How are you?
Fabulous. No, not really. No, I'm having a crisis of faith.
Are you?
It's to do with the fact that we have a specific topic for the podcast. I've been doing my due diligence, looking for my confirmation bias.
Excellent.
And not liking what I'm finding. Okay, no, don't agree with that. No. Don't agree with that.
Chris, so, you just need to remember God works in mysterious ways. He is too amazing and too large for our small human minds to comprehend.
So is that your response to our topic of why does God let bad stuff happen? Is that what the title of the topic is? Or bad shit, I think, is what we went with, wasn't it?
I generally leave our draft titles by the wayside, Chris. And roll with far more PC versions.
Okay.
What a bad things happen, Chris.
The Lord moves in mysterious ways. You just answered it. Yeah.
Bingo. Awesome. Christians can now turn this episode off and we'll speak to the rest of the human population that don't find that to be an acceptable answer.
All right. I'll catch you later.
Yeah, you're checking off because you maintain the title.
No, I don't find it an acceptable answer, so I'm still here.
So what sort of suffering have you come across, or do you want me to kick that ball off?
I'll kick it off. I haven't come across that. What, personal suffering or suffering that I've witnessed?
I was thinking in your vast, copious amounts of research that you've done.
Oh, right.
But if you want to talk about personal stuff, that's cool too.
I just wanted to talk about me.
Yeah.
It's just me. Yeah. You know,
most do.
I've got a bad back, bad teeth.
Oh, would God let that happen?
I know. I've lived the sort of life where I don't know if I can really talk that much about suffering because I've been pretty privileged. So maybe you should kick this off.
I'm not all that interested in talking about personal suffering. There's some there, but I don't think that's a good argument.
All right, let's go for the global suffering.
Outstanding. So I've got a whole bunch, but what I want to start off with, Chris, is what we're not talking about.
Oh, you're setting parameters.
Oh, yeah. Because so what I've witnessed whenever I raise this issue of suffering with believers is I raise a particular type of issue and they always revert back to human-caused suffering.
Mm.
So like murder or rape or any of those sort of things that humans do to other humans.
Mm.
Because I think you can defend that.
Mm.
I think with the free will argument that God gave us free will, and so along with giving us free will is the responsibility that we have to behave ourselves, and if we don't, well, God can't be expected to stop any bad from happening, because if he did that, then he wouldn't really have given us free will, which is a very good argument. I agree with it 100%, and so that's why I don't even bring it up, because it makes sense to me that if you give a being free will, then pain is going to come from that.
Yeah, so with free will, we're responsible for what we do as much as what we fail to do to meet needs. Right.
Another one that is often brought up is any sort of pain or suffering that is overcome. So if you get some sort of cancer and it gets healed, you can say that cancer brought about good in your life. Like I've had circumstances in my life that have been horrifically painful But I look back at them and go, gee, I'm glad that happened because I learned so many lessons from it. And I feel like I appreciate life more. I appreciate the relationships I still have more than I would if I hadn't have been through that sort of stuff. So I'm not talking about stuff that people overcome. But there's heaps of suffering in the world that people don't overcome and is not caused by humans. So I'll start from the microscopic and move to the whatever the opposite of that is, really huge.
Macroscopic.
Thank you, Chris. If we're starting off small, then if you go all the way back to the Black Death, which killed something like between 30 and 60% of all of Europe, that's a fairly staggering thing. And then you've got the Spanish flu, which killed more people than World War One and World War Two combined. And then you've got smallpox, which was the only one I bothered to look up images for because I really didn't want to look at images of these. But smallpox was horrific and killed something like 500 million people. Like those three things, I don't know how you can say God watched over all of that when he created the world. He knew everything. He knew these things were going to happen. And he just went, yeah, that'll do.
You sent me an image of the smallpox. Was that the one you sent me?
Yeah, it was a little girl with smallpox.
That was pretty disturbing. Yeah.
Yeah. And having a little daughter of my own just makes it that much more relatable. You just see it and go, geez, that can be my daughter. It's not just 500 million, a very large and incomprehensible number, but it's, you know, just one of those is just like heartbreaking.
Thank you, science.
Yeah. Yeah.
Science doesn't get anywhere near enough credit for its contribution to the good of humanity, I reckon. Without science and good medical practice, and that'd still be around.
Vaccinations, Chris, they cause autism. You should never get your kid vaccinated. I'd much prefer to have smallpox still around. That's sarcasm, you idiots out there.
So now I've got to try and get back into the serious mode and reply to that. Yeah, sicknesses like that. So what do you want me to try and defend?
I don't know. You don't need to defend anything. You can just go, yeah, I agree, that's horrendous. Or I don't know. Who knows how the whole God could look down on that and not do anything. Not even not do anything, but like allow it in the first place. Because like these are things that don't have to be part of the system. Like if you're creating something, you could just make it so that the Black Death doesn't exist.
Right.
Like why would a loving God allow these sort of things? When he created the universe, knowing everything, why would he have decided that was a good thing or that was something that couldn't be avoided? Or like, how do you come at that?
Yeah, a lot of Christians would come at that by saying that we don't live in a perfect world. We don't live in a utopian existence because of the fall. I guess that's what the Bible talks about a lot. A typical understanding is that there was a fall and the creation that we live in now wasn't, I guess, what was intended. It's broken and things like that are part of the fall. I don't buy that because there's flaws for that with me. There's an omnipotent, all-powerful God, you know, would know that was going to happen. So I mean, it's an incredible oversight. Surely God knew that the fall was going to happen if there is such a thing as a fall. And I do find it interesting. Maybe, you know, the story of the fall, there's some sort of seed of truth in there, you know, in that the world is broken or something. But the idea that there was a perfect world and then there was this tree with this knowledge of good and evil and don't eat the apple and humanity go and eat the apple, and that was always going to happen, wasn't it? That was just always going to happen. So I find it hard to just go with the idea that horribleness in the world is part of the fall. So how else do I come to terms with it? One of the things that I was reading in preparation for talking about this topic was I was trying to go back through Viktor Frankl, who I read when I was doing some theological training and stuff, and he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. He was a Jew that was in the Holocaust camps. He wrote a book and I had to write an essay on it. One of the quotes was, if there is meaning in life at all, then there must be meaning in suffering, because suffering is part of life. So I'm now going, what is the meaning? Where do I find the meaning? And it's a struggle. It's hard. He would go on talking about if human beings have a why, then you can bear almost any how. But I don't know where the meaning is. You wanted to set parameters, you know, I want to respect that. So, but it's like, yes, there is meaning in when people overcome things. We can take hurt and we can heal and we can overcome it. But for something that human beings have no control over, where is the meaning within that? We're questioning God here. That's what you're doing. You're wanting to question God.
Well, God doesn't answer, so I just like questioning Christians.
Okay.
They answer.
Trying. I don't know. I don't see God as really in control of all of everything that happens. So it's, Genesis again, which is just poetry. Again, I might see a seed of truth in that, talks about we were given this world and we were given dominion over it and whatever. So God's not micromanaging everything. This is, it's a wild place. It's not tame, and there can be beauty in wildness, but yes, there can be scary things about that, and there can be hurt and there can be pain. My explanation would be that these are the parameters we've been given for whatever reason. This is the world we've been given, and I don't really believe in an initial perfect creation even. So it does make me question, is God all good? It does make me question, is God all powerful? I do trust that God is all good, trust that God is all powerful, but I don't think God controls. I think the control has been relinquished to us, and we're not in control of it either. But without the adversity, without the wildness, without the struggle, without the suffering, I don't really see how we progress, you know, without sickness, where do the cures come from? Without these things, how do we grow as a people? Is it some sort of attempt at refining humanity? It's like if we had a perfect world, Nick.
Let's call it heaven.
Yeah, well, this is where the crisis of faith that I was talking about earlier comes from. I can deal with Earth not being perfect. And if we have free will in this not perfect world, I can come to terms with all of that. But then I'm going, you don't create a free will creation and then we get to heaven and we no longer have free will. It doesn't make sense to me. If there is a heaven, then we continue being free will. So we are in this perfect existence then, which is heaven, like, and we're meant to be bringing heaven to earth. So we're meant to be bringing this perfect existence to earth. That'd be lovely. I want us to grow up as humanity and sort of prove God wrong. And, you know, when God says, if God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven, I hope that that's something that we achieve, you know, and God doesn't just come down and go, all right, you've stuffed it up. Here we go. Now it's happening. You know,
I think God stuffed it up first. He was the first one to create things. If he wanted it to be perfect, he could have created it perfect.
But if you create something perfect, this is my crisis of faith with heaven and what is it? But if you create something perfect, isn't it sort of like everyone being born with a silver spoon in their mouth and we all just live these decadent lives and we're entitled, we're lazy, we're privileged? You know, where are the opportunities for courage and compassion and standing up for something that you believe in and fighting for something? Where do all of these things come from without there being some sort of adversity to force us to progress?
Yeah, so I definitely agree with you, the idea that adversity can help us to appreciate what we have and it can mold us into having better morals, better values, to treat other people better, all these sort of things. But that only works if you're one of the people that survived. It doesn't work if you're one of the 70 million children that die before they're born.
Mm.
Like, again, I agree with this, but you can only learn from your suffering if you make it through the suffering. And there's a lot of people that don't. You and I are two of the lucky ones.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I mean, but
and everyone listening to this is lucky ones as well.
If you believe in a heaven, then you believe that pain on this earth is temporary and you go to a heaven. So, but as we've discussed previously, that can be a dangerous, pernicious belief.
Yeah, let's go kill some people, Chris.
That's right, yeah. So pain can be temporary, it can leave a mark, but it's, you know, for a long time. But in one sense, yeah, it's temporary. And so I sort of want to focus on what is eternal. Can you learn from your suffering while you're going through it, even if it ends in death? I mean, this is the thing, like everything in our linear existence has an end. Death is part of our existence. And I don't want to breed pernicious ideas, but, and I don't know if I agree with what I'm about to say, but does it matter that much if something dies earlier to something dying later, if there is such a thing as eternity?
Mm.
I don't like that.
It's got to be a good thing. If there's eternal bliss after we die, then it's got to be a good thing to die. you and me, the poor souls that are left here.
And I would never want to encourage anyone to do that. So
Chris,
I can't
Chris
sit
says,
with that.
Kill yourself.
If you're going to die, then what's the rush? Why rush? Why get there in a hurry? Why? Because there's suffering.
If there's ice cream forever.
Now, it just makes me question heaven a lot. And is even heaven perfect? So angels, if the angels exist, surely they're free will creations to some extent as well?
Well, they have to be because that's where Satan came from.
Well, that's the thing. So there was a war in heaven. If there's a war in heaven, how perfect is heaven?
Or maybe it's all just made up.
Right. If it's all just made up, why do you care if things are unjust? Where does that sense of caring come from? You have a sense of right and wrong and of morality, right?
If, so you're asking where do morals come from?
In a way, like...
Or are you asking why do I care?
Yeah, like wouldn't it all just be meaningless then? C.S. Lewis, he said, a man does not call a line crooked unless he has some idea of a straight line. This was when he went from being...
Is that line or lion? Rah.
Line, not a rah. No, a straight line.
Gotcha.
This was when he was moving from being an atheist to being a Christian. He was saying he was angry at the universe for being so unjust. Then he was questioning himself, saying, a man does not call a line crooked unless he has some idea of a straight line. What was I comparing this universe to when I call it unjust? And I think he's saying that the God has sort of shown us a straight line, and I guess he's saying that suffering may be better to be understood from within faith than without, because out of that, is it all just random?
So where do morals come from? Where, or is there meaning in suffering? So the argument that I've heard atheists put up at this point is basically to not really answer the question, but instead to have a crack at where believers get their morals from. So if you get your morals from the Bible, then there's heaps of evil stuff in the Bible. So if you're saying that you can't possibly get your morals from outside religion, that without belief in God, that everything just falls into an anarchic mess where there's no good, there's no bad, there's no right or wrong. Certainly if you think that you base your morals on the Bible or the Quran, then that seems to me to be a self-defeating argument. But if you take away the Bible and the Quran and just say that, I don't know what religion I'm from, but I am confident there is a God and that is where we get our morals from somehow, then I think that's a reasonable argument. But again, you'd have to defend why God allows all this other crap to go on. If that's your version of good, then that's slightly difficult to defend.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, God has set out a straight line that we can follow.
Where? I haven't seen any straight lines to follow.
I assume that the answer is Jesus.
Okay. Yeah, so I think I love the story of Jesus as much as you do.
Like, yeah.
His life is what I want to be like. I want to be the person that says, love your enemies and forgive endlessly. Well, actually, to a degree, I think there is a place for punishment and saying, no, you have screwed up. And we need to protect society from these sort of people. But I do agree that Jesus's morals and values were something that I look up to and aspire and want to be like. I don't remember where it is in the Bible, but I think Jesus says at some point, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And for a long time, that kept me in Christianity, that verse, because there was so much in Christianity that just made no sense and so much in the world that made no sense to me. And so I can understand how people would just get confused by all of these sort of issues, but still hold on to that verse. If Jesus is what God is like, then I'll sign up to that because that's cool. In terms of meaning from suffering, yeah, I definitely think you can get meaning from suffering. I've had suffering sort of things in my life and have found them to have a positive effect on me.
But now we're walking out of the parameters you said.
You asked about...
Sorry, yeah. What about Jesus? He suffered.
He did.
Right.
Pretty horrifically.
Yeah. I liked that he didn't even want to. He was praying and shedding blood in his sweat that he was, you know, like, please, if there's another way.
Yeah.
But then he decided to go with God's will. So I guess we're deciding if God's will is good or not.
God's will is for Jesus to be a human sacrifice. Do you believe in human sacrifice, Chris?
I believe that sacrifice itself can be a beautiful thing.
Nah, you're avoiding the question. I'm not talking about giving up your chips for someone else.
Well, okay. Well, it's a weird question. If Jesus is God, then is God ordering Jesus to die, or is Jesus making the choice to sacrifice himself? Human sacrifice isn't, you know, jumping on a grenade to save your mates in the trenches or anything. That's not akin to throwing someone down a volcano.
No, it's not.
No, it's a different beast altogether. So we probably don't want to get too much into all of that.
No.
It does mean something to me that if Jesus was the face of the Father, then God knows what we experience when it comes to suffering. Jesus wept when he saw suffering. That was, I think, the shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. He just had a lot of compassion. Compassion is a very empathetic response. It's, you know, to feel their pain, to feel their burden, and then to act. That gives me some comfort. But, you know, how do you comfort the mother of the two-year-old that died from smallpox or whatever? What do you say?
It was God's plan.
No, that's what they say. It's God's plan. They say the Lord moves in mysterious ways. That's they say,
and the mother says, "Fuck off, you piece of shit."
It doesn't really suffice, does it?
No, it does not.
I don't know. Maybe you don't say anything. Maybe you just try and listen.
Yeah. Maybe you just know that you're there with them.
You do see a lot of that, like, you know, people expecting healing to be done. That can just be so damaging, I think. It can make me really angry. Oh.
Yeah, but if you believe in your God.
But I don't believe it in my micromanaging God.
Yeah. So I think this is the difference between you and certainly what I've observed in most Christian circles, that you don't believe in an interventionist God. So you don't think that God is really involved with anything down on earth anymore?
Somewhat. I would say that God's not really involved in anything on earth in a physical way. But I would still say that people can still attempt to be in harmony with God. People can still try and do God's will, but God doesn't always get his way. Because
God doesn't always get his way?
No, because people have free will. But again, I, like you were saying about Job another time, that when God would say, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth?" You know, I'm like going, well, God, all powerful. I sort of don't really see any evidence that God is an interventionist God, but I can't say that God cannot do that. Job, that's interesting. Job's your favorite story in the Bible. That one's all about suffering, right?
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure. I'd still say it's my favorite. All right,
it was. It was.
It was. When I was a Bible-believing Christian, it gave me great comfort to know that it is okay to get pissed off with God and raise your fists to the heavens and say, "God, I do not understand. You have killed everything that I care about and you have not done anything about it. And I am pissed off with you right now." And that God comes down and doesn't. Well, he has a little bit of a go at Job, but mostly he's understanding to Job.
Mm.
And I like that because I also, like Job, see a lot of evil and suffering in the world and don't understand what the heck God's doing. And so am constantly raising my fist to the heavens saying, "What the hell's going on, God?" And so the idea that I can expect God to be accepting of my anger and that I just call it as I see it and I'm not pretending that I don't see it.
Yeah, I've had good swearing matches with God. Well.
Well, really? He swears back?
No, I was going to say, I swear and nothing comes back. But I also don't get smitten with a lightning bolt. So, but just on Job, there was another character in that story that I'm just remembering.
The devil.
Yeah, and that's another one that gets blamed on for all of the suffering in the world.
It's never God. It's either the devil or it's us.
I have never read that story as a literal story, the story of Job.
I should hope not.
The whole devil and God thing hanging out in heaven discussing what they're going to do to Job, you know, was all a bit weird.
"Hey, devil, have you considered my servant Job?
Yeah.
Go pick on this dude. He's had it too easy."
I would say that's a pretty wicked thing to do. I'm not going to hold that God does wicked things. So yet you may still convince me. You're pretty convincing often. But my favourite story in the Bible is Ecclesiastes.
Oh, I hated that one. That was my least favourite, Chris.
It was meaningless, meaningless. All is meaningless.
Yeah.
I think one of the beautiful things from that one was that there was also a time for all things. There's a time for a love and a time for play, and I guess there's a time for suffering. There's
a time for smallpox. There's a time for the Black Death. There's a time for Spanish flu. There's a time for mass extinctions. Hooray. Well done, God.
I just get confused. I'm like, if you want a world without there being pain, without there being death, without there being struggle, do you just want to be controlled? I find that hard to understand.
I don't want there to be any suffering that can't be overcome.
Right. Is that not the case?
Of course that's not the case.
Can't we overcome all of the suffering that's in the world?
So we can on a humanity-wide scale, but not on an individual scale. If my son gets hit by a bus tomorrow, he's still dead. He's not overcoming it.
Yeah, but then we can do things to make the road rules safer. We can have...
Yeah, but he's not coming back, Chris.
No, okay.
Again, that's good for the rest of civilization, but it's not done nothing for him. He's still dead.
Right.
And if there's a heaven, then cool. That's no problem. But again, if there's a heaven, you should be going around killing people.
You and your pernicious thoughts.
That's not my thoughts that are pernicious. That's just fact, Chris. Fact. I deal in facts.
Okay.
Not superstition. Do you want me to go through any of my other sufferingness things? There might be some more that you want to get your teeth into, unless you've got some more thoughts.
They sound like they'll be really depressing. Yeah, go ahead.
Welcome to my world. So, well, actually, this next one isn't all that depressing. It's just weird. I've written a blog about this, and I presume you've read it because you read
it's
everything that I write.
Yeah, I couldn't pronounce what it is, though.
I did not even attempt to try and pronounce it, Chris, so I'm just calling it a parasitic wasp. So there's this parasitic wasp. It was one of the things that Charles Darwin brought up whenever he was asked about a loving God. He brought up this parasitic wasp that flies around, finds a friendly-looking caterpillar, inserts all of its eggs inside this living caterpillar. And so this living caterpillar is just going about munching leaves, and then all of a sudden it gets a little prick in its back and doesn't think much about it. And then, of course, as the eggs hatch and the larvae come out, the larvae start eating the caterpillar from the inside out while the caterpillar is still alive. And so people often look at nature. They'll look at, you know, a frozen waterfall, or they'll look at a hummingbird or whatever beautiful thing they can see, and they go, well, how could there not be a God? How could all of this happen? Just, you know, look at all the beauty here. But if you look at all of creation and not just the pretty things that you like focusing on, you come across animals like these that I can't imagine what God would have been thinking. If you've got a loving God that's thinking, what animals should we have on earth this time? Let's think about it. Maybe an animal that impregnates unwillingly another animal, and then the animal doesn't just die. No, we'll let it stay alive, and the babies of the animal will eat it from the inside out. Brilliant. Let's have one of them. Like, I just can't imagine how you can think that God actually controlled creation, came up with this creature, and is a loving God. Those things don't match for me.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to talk about that, or do you want me to keep going?
We can talk about that.
Go.
Did God make it, or was it something that evolved?
Oh, okay. So God didn't create people.
I don't like where I'm going with this.
So God just created like the first single cell organism, and then just took his hands off the controls and thought, oh, let's see where this goes.
Well, I mean, I am getting back to the relinquishing control. Control was relinquished pretty early on, but even so, that still raises the question of, if you're the creator, doesn't the buck stop with you? And if God's omnipotent and stuff, God can see where it's all going to lead to.
Yeah.
So if God exists, God can still be sovereign, but it still raises the question of, is God good?
Yeah. If I have a gun in my house and I don't keep it locked in a drawer and my 4-year-old picks it up and blows a head off, I'm responsible for that. And that is nowhere near what we're talking about here.
Mm.
What we're talking about here is like God actually creating something. Not just leaving a cabinet unlocked and someone else come along and creating something, but he actually created this. And if he knows everything, he's got to be responsible.
I can't imagine he shirks that responsibility.
Well, he's got some angry caterpillars to console then.
Yeah. What do I say about the caterpillars?
They don't have souls, so who cares?
Well, in one sense, yeah, but we can still go further up. I mean, I remember Stephen Fry, he talked about a particular wasp.
Not a wasp.
Was it? No, sorry, not a wasp. Some sort of parasite thing, which burrowed into a child's eye and laid eggs or something. And so we can still affect humans. So
yeah, the kid goes blind. I couldn't find that anywhere, by the way. I looked that up and I couldn't find what he was talking about.
All right. He's just making it up then.
I don't reckon he's making it up.
No.
I trust Stephen Fry's IQ a little bit more than my own, sadly.
He's a very clever man. Do animals have a morality? Is there a right and a wrong in what goes on in the animal kingdom?
You're an animal, Chris.
I am an animal, yes, but I believe that I'm also something more than an animal as well at the same time.
Okay, what about Pilot? Pilot is Chris's dog, by the way.
Pilot is an animal. Animals are very precious to me, so I've been a vegetarian for 22 years now because of animals. And that's not something that comes at all with a religious belief. You know, if it says anything in the Bible, that's fine. You can eat meat. You can eat anything. Nothing is barred.
Eat humans.
Except for humans.
Does it say that? Probably doesn't.
It probably doesn't say it. I don't remember ever coming across an anti-cannibalism verse, so. I don't know what to say. Because I still see the wildness of the world. I see nature as a reflection of who God is, which is a scary thing to say if there are wasps that eat their way outside of a caterpillar, you know. But I appreciate living in a wild world. I don't want the world that I live on to be tame. I don't want to be controlled. So I've got free will. I live in a wild world. I am, like everyone, pretty much drawn to adventure. And with adventure comes these obstacles and things that we have to overcome. And so I like a wild world. I love storms. I'm drawn to massive storms. I love them. But how much would I appreciate being in the midst of a massive cyclone compared to the storms that I've been to? You know, probably wouldn't be as excited about that.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
No. We've had a whole lot of cyclones, hurricanes, whatever you want to call them, causing a lot of damage and killing a lot of people. I mean, we've always had cyclones, but the power of them is potentially human-influenced if you believe in climate change. As in, they could be getting more powerful. Oh, rubbish. Are you going more with this sarcasm thing, Nick? Are you?
I do like sarcasm, Chris. Yeah. I apologize. It's the lowest form of humor, I've been told. Other than penis jokes, that is. But if you can include both in the same one, you're onto a winner. Winston Churchill said at some point, nothing in life is so exhilarating as to be shot at without result.
Yeah.
So if you get shot at and you don't get shot, then yeah, you can talk about how fun that was. If you get shot, not so much. So we can enjoy these storms from the comfort of our storm-proof house in Tasmania, where I don't think I've ever really seen a storm.
No.
Not a real one.
That was the one thing I missed when I moved down there, was storms.
You should move to Bangladesh then. You'll love it.
You get some good wind in Tasmania, though.
Well, that's fairly safe. You're fairly safe from wind.
Yeah. I don't reckon God starts storms. I don't reckon God gives people cancer or anything like that. I just don't believe that God sets any specific forms of suffering into play. Really? So God is not the cause of any specific form of suffering, but God is, I guess, the cause of creation.
And at that moment of creation, he would have known that all that was
going to
happen.
So that's still an issue for me.
Yeah. If you were to say God isn't all-loving, that makes sense. If you were to say God isn't all-knowing, that he created something and just didn't know how it would turn out, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So if that's the God that you worship, then yeah, suffering, that's pretty easy to come at. But if you're saying that God is all-loving and is all-knowing, then there's not many ways you can answer these sort of questions, I don't think.
Why do we hang on to that? Why do Christians claim that one so strongly? I'm claiming it too.
Well, I think the idea of God is that God isn't limited in any of the ways that we are limited.
Mm.
So we are limited morally. We screw up from time to time. God doesn't do any of that. We are limited in that we were born and we will die at some point. Well, God ain't limited like that. So we sort of make God into being a superhero. He does all the stuff that we can't do. And so we don't know everything. Well, God's all knowing. I'm not all powerful. God's all powerful. It's just sort of like it's your Marvel superhero, God with a cape.
If I was to believe the Old Testament, the God of the Bible, which I don't do a lot of.
But you're still a Christian.
But I'm still a Christian.
Even though I don't believe in the Bible.
Well, I think believing in the Bible is setting it up as an idol anyway.
Hear that, Christians?
Yeah, hear that. The Bible isn't God. The Bible is a book written by human beings.
Inspired word of God, Chris.
Sure, inspired.
Which is infallible.
Not really.
Jesus did not come to overturn any word in the Old Testament.
He fulfilled it.
That's right. He fulfilled murdering your kids because they swear at you.
No, but what did he fulfill?
I don't know. What did he fulfill?
Fulfilled his role, I guess.
He got killed. Well done.
For me, he fulfilled in the sense that the old laws weren't relevant anymore.
But they used to be.
But did they come from God?
Moses would say so.
Yes, Moses would say so. And so there were, what, 10 commandments, and then suddenly there was a whole massive book called Leviticus, you know, like.
Who wrote that?
Yeah, so for me, Jesus came and, you know, the new law was love the Lord your God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. And if you go with them, then that's fine.
Yeah, but the reason you believe in the stuff Jesus talked about and not Leviticus isn't because God has tapped you on the shoulder and whispered in your ear and said, hey, Chris, these are the ones that matter. The way you've worked out which ones to follow is because you've got an internal compass that just says, these ones are cool. These Leviticus ones are batshit crazy. It's something in you that's good, Chris. It's not the Bible.
Not that good. And there's another basis, a foundation that it's all built upon for me. And I guess I've told you this before, but the experience. Do you really want to get into this?
Sure.
Okay. In all of my years of trying to get to know God and beating myself up because I never would hear back from God and looking at other people and just going, why do they have such a good relationship and I don't? And then the 15 years that I sort of walked away from being a Christian, but I sort of really kept believing in God, just stopped living like I believed in God. But then I was able to come back because I guess it comes down to my father a lot. He still loved me unconditionally, so I was able to sort of come back. And I've seen a lot of people who walk away from stuff and, you know, it's like, you walk out that door, you're never coming back. Like,
yeah, don't, that's going to work.
I'm like, don't do that. Don't, you know, what if they don't come back? It's ridiculous. I made my way back to Christianity and just as I sort of did so, my father was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And so I moved back into the family home for, I guess, the last 2 or so years of his life as he deteriorated with that. And people were trying to pray for him and anoint him with oil. And he thought all of that was a bit, I don't know. He was like, if that's what you believe and that's what you think. But he was pretty realist about it all. He was like, I've got a brain tumor. It's the worst you can get. It's in the middle of my brain. They can't dig it out. You know, I'd have to take out all my brain, basically. You know, so he's like,
He was kind of attached to his brain.
Yeah, so he was resolved to the fact that it was just a matter of time. But for me, his suffering in those last 2 years, his body was deteriorating. The medication that they had him on and all of the chemotherapy and radiotherapy was all a tough run. But I guess what I learned from him was he saw God was in how he faced it. He didn't think it came from God. He didn't think God was going to heal him of it. He was open to that, but so he cared about everyone around him. He was always asking how everyone else was going and, you know, they would all come to him. And so then, yeah, he got to the point where he lost certain functions. Like one of the first things he lost was inhibitions. And that was interesting just to see that he just would say whatever he was feeling. And they were all loving. Everything that he would say was just loving or cheeky because he was pretty cheeky. He was a bit of a knocker. And then he had a massive seizure and we took him to the hospital and he never regained consciousness from that. We'd gone home and because they said he would, you know, make it through the night and whatever, then we were called saying, we don't think he's going to make it through the night. He's really struggling. We think you should get in here now. And That was in Tasmania, out in the wilderness. So that was like a 45-minute drive for us to get there. And we got there and his breathing was really labored. And as soon as we walked in, his breathing slowed and it slowed and it slowed until he just stopped breathing. And so I'm there watching this happen. My mum's there holding his hand and stroking his hair. And I felt the presence of God. Telling this story is a weird thing to do. I feel like sometimes I have to tell this story because this is a story I keep telling myself, which is sort of the foundation of why I find it hard to ignore faith, even after all of the things that that Nick keeps throwing at me. But
I'll stop whenever you ask me to.
I felt like that there was this warm and loving and good presence. And it was the most beautiful moment. And yet, was I emotionally heightened at the time? Yes, because it'd just be stuff happening in my brain. And yes, but I try and give myself a little bit more credence than that. I felt like I was aware of something, that there was something present, you know. And my father, you know, he was there, and then he wasn't there. His body was still there, but he wasn't there, and it was okay. So something happened for me, which I find that really hard to ignore, even though, you know, Nick's logical arguments that make sense to me can paint a different picture, and I can go there in my own logical steps that, you know, maybe God isn't all good or all powerful, but it was just something that I haven't been able to shake. And telling people that story is a weird thing too, because it's a personal experience, so it's not proof of anything.
So when you look back at that experience,
yeah,
when you think about it and go through the process of retelling it, do those emotions come back? Is it like reliving it, or is it more like watching a movie of something that happened to you where you're a bit detached from it? Like, what's it like?
Bit detached now. I can sort of see myself standing there. It's almost like, you know, my father on the hospital bed is enveloped by this halo, like a light, you know, like there's this warm orange glow.
But and there were wings.
There was no warm orange glow. I know that. There's the part of me which knows that I saw nothing.
Were you on LSD at the time, Chris?
I was not. Yeah. No, they were the other experiences. yeah.
Just as real.
I do wonder a lot about some of the Bible stories when people are like possessed by demons, and I'm going, you sure they didn't just eat the wrong thing, or they were a little bit mentally unstable, or
yeah.
Hey, I could be crazy and seeing things that I want to see that aren't really there. I have to accept that, but I guess I haven't accepted that yet. Find it too hard to ignore. And so there's some suffering which ended in death. I guess it's sort of relevant, but
yeah, not for you.
Not for me. No, I even after that, we were then, you know, as everyone around you is all finding it very hard to cope with his passing, and they're all telling you how sad they are for your loss and everything. And I'm like going, I'm okay, because he's okay.
Yeah.
But then I also felt really bad because here's my dad trying to make sure everyone else is okay. And
yeah,
and I didn't do that.
Well, it was your father, Chris. I think you were allowed to be consumed with the love for your father. I think that's okay.
So you're a father now. I'm not a father.
I'm a father.
Mm.
Yeah.
You can't control your kids, can you?
Would
you want to control everything for them?
No, I wouldn't want to control everything of them.
You'd want to keep them from unnecessary suffering, wouldn't you?
Definitely from unnecessary suffering. But even moral sort of stuff. Like, I'm constantly teaching my kids about using their manners.
Yeah.
And about, yeah, like all that sort of stuff. Like, if I'd never did that, I'm quite sure my kids would be different people. It takes constant reinforcement to get them to be decent human beings. And they're not yet. So this may come across as callous.
Yeah.
But it's
go
it's
right only, ahead. I can take it.
I know you can. And that's what I was going to say, that the only reason I feel okay raising these sort of issues is because I have enough respect for you in the same way that your dad did, that your dad, when you're having those doubts at the church door and you said, oh, I want to go in, your dad was, all right, cool. You're a big boy. I trust you. I respect you. In that same sort of way, like, I wouldn't want to have thoughts and not share them with you because I think that you're too frail or something, because I don't think you're like that. I think you're strong enough to cope with whatever I throw at you. So I think we would both agree that personal experience just isn't a reliable way to look at any situation that you're emotionally entangled with. So we know, scientifically, we know that vaccinations are safe. And yet there are thousands, possibly millions of people out there who will swear that their kid got autism from a vaccination because they had the vaccination and the week after their kid starts changing. We know that experts say that wind farms are safe, but there are a certain number of people who swear that this wind farm was put up and 3 weeks later, my husband got diagnosed with cancer. And when there's that sort of a link, your brain just goes there. It just makes the link. Even if it isn't a real link, we are evolved to see patterns. Pattern recognition is crucial in how we evolved to survive the savannas of Africa. We needed to be able to work out what was dangerous and what was safe. And seeing patterns in things was really helpful. And it was more useful for us to see a pattern in something that wasn't there than it was to miss the thing that we really needed to see. Because if you miss the thing you really need to see, you die. Mm. And so having a false positive, no, I'm not going to get these terms right, but I think you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are people that swear that horoscopes are true. There are people that swear that they were abducted by aliens. There are people that swear that they have ghosts living in their house. Mm. Like, just because they say it doesn't mean I go, all right, brilliant.
Yeah.
There's aliens. There's...
But there might be.
There might be.
Yeah.
But so what I say is when there's evidence.
Yeah.
When an alien abducts me or turns up in my backyard, well, I'll believe it. I've got no evidence as to whether there's aliens or not. I haven't seen any, so I sort of assume there aren't.
Okay.
Until I see them.
All right. So my question is then, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But my question is then, okay, so say you live out your days, you die on your front porch yelling at those kids to keep off your grass.
Those bastards.
Yeah. And then you go and meet your maker.
Yeah.
So at this point, you have evidence that God exists because you're standing in front of him, right?
Man, I'm going to be crabby. You are one lazy God.
Yeah, so what do you say? Are you going to have a go at God for all of the bad shit that's in the world?
So sitting here in front of you right now, Chris, I'm absolutely going to lay you. I'm going to tell him all the crazy stuff.
Hey, if I can take you telling me that maybe I'm just seeing patterns, then I'm sure God can take you, you know, having a go at him. You can lay in the God. He'll be fine with that.
He'll be fine with that. Yeah. Well, I hope so. I hope you're right.
He might slap you around a little bit.
Oh, he won't give us anything that we can't handle, Chris.
What would you want to say?
The first thing I would say to God is, where were you? Or for those 20 years that I prayed every night, why didn't you answer?
Did you actually do that?
Yeah.
Right. I thought you were just sort of, last time when you said that, that was just sort of a concept. I didn't realize you actually prayed every night for 20 years.
No, I would have prayed more than once a day for 20 years. Yeah. Isn't that what all Christians do, Chris?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I pray heaps.
Yeah, good.
Yep.
Good. That's better. You know, when you're lying in bed at night and you've got nothing better to do. I don't want to go into too much what you do in bed at night, but when I was in bed at night, Chris, I would lay there and I'd go, God, I'm sorry for these things I screwed up during the day. And I wouldn't use that language, of course, because then I'd burn in hell for eternity. But yeah, of course you pray. Yeah. Mostly I would just ask God for a girlfriend, but, you know, that didn't work out either.
So you say, God, where were you?
God, where were you? You're the world's greatest hide and seeker. Mm-hmm. I would ask him all these questions about suffering that make no sense to me. I would ask them how it makes sense that there are so many different gods. I think that one's fairly easy, so long as it's not the Christian God. Like if it's not a specific one of them that's actually going, no, no, Jesus is the Son of God. And like if it's that God, then yeah, then I've got questions, you know, where did Muhammad come from? Where did all these other gods come from? I mean, that could only happen if God's only communicating with a very small slice of mankind and then the rest are hallucinating.
Yeah.
Which is strange that they're hallucinating about the exact same thing that we are, but we're right. That's quite ironic. Yeah, I think those are the main ones I'd like to ask God about.
Yep. I'd probably just tremble in fear.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, I say that now when I'm sitting in front of you, Chris, but if I actually get there, I think I might just hold my tongue a little bit. I was just kidding, God, I promise.
So I don't know, what do we do now? What do we do with the fact that there is suffering in the world? Do we blame God?
Yes.
Yep, all right, going to blame God.
Or we just go, actually, I don't blame God. You can blame God, but I just sort of go, well, probably makes more sense that either there isn't a God or God just doesn't really care about us, mm-hmm. which is fine. I can cope with that because there's, you know, 7 point however many billion people that don't care about me right now, which is fine. They don't have to. They got their own stuff to do. God might have his own stuff to do. That's fine. So what do? I go on with my life. I go, what sort of person do I want to be? What sort of world do I want to create? What sort of community do I want to be part of? What sort of future do I want for my kids? What sort of world do I want to leave them? Those are the sort of questions I'm interested in. And
because I just don't know if we're going to find adequate answers to these questions.
Well, you got me to a very positive ending talking about all those things. What sort of world do you want to create?
Well, that's the thing. Like, what I'm saying is I don't know if I'm going to get answers to these questions until I meet the Maker. So in the time being, there is a lot of darkness in the world, but I guess I don't really want to feed that darkness. I'd rather, you know, same as you do with your internal world. You don't feed the darkness, you feed the light. I guess we, you know, we go on and we create the world together. It's ours. We go and make it as just as possible.
Yeah. I think the thing that I worry about with that sort of a comment, not comment, but that whole dialogue that you just, or monologue you just gave, is that it ends up just throwing your hands up in the air and saying, I don't know why it's like this, but I just trust God anyway. Whereas I don't want to do that. I want to live with the questions and say, no, no, these questions, I have not found an answer and I'm not okay with not finding an answer. I want to find an answer. And if there is no answer, that's okay. I'm still going to keep looking for it.
I'm still looking for it. There's a whole lot of questions out of this. You know, how does heaven fit for me? Is God all powerful? Is God all good? All of these, I'm still going to sit with them. I'm still having a crisis of faith, but that's okay.
Welcome to the Eternity Ward, where we take people out of faith.
I don't think I'm out of faith. I'm, you know, there is things I find very hard to ignore about this pattern that I see. That is partly what it is. You know, it's this pattern that I see in the world, this pattern of good, this pattern of life, of love. Where does that come from? Is it just humanity? And look, you know what? If it's just humanity, that's pretty special and that's pretty amazing.
Mm.
And if it's God, and if there is a God, that's pretty special and that's pretty amazing. Either way, the fact that we have a life is special and amazing. And I wish everyone had it to the full.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this the wrap up?
I think it is. It's a beautiful, optimistic, positive note to end a non-optimistic podcast on.
That's a place to leave it then. And thanks for listening and hope you enjoyed that. I enjoyed it. I sometimes sound like I don't enjoy it, but I enjoyed it.
I think you and I both like wrestling, Chris.
Yeah.
We don't like just coming up with a difficult question and going, I'll think about that later. We like actually engaging with the issue and getting in there and getting dirty.
Yep. And wherever you've listened to this, you can put your own opinion in a message box somewhere.
If you've got answers for us.
Yeah.
We want to know it.
Because we probably didn't get there.
That goes to you too, God, if you'd like to join the conversation at any point.
Absolutely. We'll catch you next time.
Farewell.
Here again, contributing again, and they say I never do. And there are ways that you can contribute too, dear listener. Leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you listen to it, share it on social media or discuss it in your blog, podcast or fellowship group. Subscribe, like, nod your head, raise your fist, send a hallelujah, but don't send a prayer because I'm rather busy right now. Join the discussion in the comment section, ask questions and do come back and join us again here on the Eternity Ward.